it's remarkable how few people have a clear picture of how critical electricity is in the lives all across the country, but nowhere more so in the city. If you don't know, we pour as much raw energy into generating electricity in this country as we do into well more than we pour into our cars, considerably more. It's as large as the entire oil sector in terms of the raw energy that goes into it, and it is far more critical to the functioning of daily life. The oil system shut down, the pipelines, the pumps, and so on. When the electricity goes, your home heating system shut down. It is really absolutely crucial, and nowhere more so in the city. The other remarkable thing about electricity is how invisible it is to most people. This wasn't always so, but if you track the history of electricity over a century, from the days when Edison started right here in Wall Street putting up the first grid, there was a time, if you look at the old pictures of the city, there was this canopy, a forest of wires across the overhead wires, of course, over the streets, the power plants visible and noisy right in this city. And you've just, over a century, you've just watched the infrastructure of electricity recede to the point where it is, for most people, a Cheshire cat. You just don't see anything but the smile. There's this happy little outlet you plug in, things light up, and you just don't worry about it. And, of course, for policymakers, it has then become the same thing. You just take it for granted. It's going to happen. It will be there. And there's this vast infrastructure underneath making it all tick. It's certainly the largest physical infrastructure on the planet, our national grid and all its bits, with the possible exception of the highway system. It is enormously important, and it requires fantastic amounts of a very skilled engineering and constant work, and it is very low on the policy radar screen, and this creates problems. People just aren't paying sufficient attention to the nitty-gritty of how you govern and regulate this in ways that allow it to grow. There's a very interesting political consensus now emerging between the people who want to get over carbon and the people who want to get oil. Electricity will certainly be at the center of that. We see a convergence of electricity and the transportation sector, the two very large sectors of our energy economy. It's extremely important. If I guess this was embargoed. I was going to say, if you haven't read this yet, you really should. This is really a first-class paper, and it's extremely important in a very practical way. It is beautifully written. It's full of very pretty pictures. I commend it to you very strongly. I will say no more, but let me just say a few words about its author. Hope Cohen is a deputy director of the Manhattan Institute's First Center for Rethinking Development. She focuses on a variety of development issues in the city. Before that, she was in the public sector. She worked with the MTA. She is a volunteer in the public sector as well. She's a member of Community Board 7 on the Upper West Side. As with all our panelists, she has a fuller bio in your package. I now give you Hope Cohen.
Thank you, Peter. Oops. Let me see if I can switch programs here for a moment. Yeah, I'm going to start with a brief video clip to introduce our topic today.
Gentlemen, enjoy your new power substation.
This is terrible. I thought I was going to live next to a powerful man. Now I just live next to power.
It's not all bad. At least we'll get fresh electricity.
I know it's ugly, but living next door to a power station means our baby will probably grow up to have superpowers.
And that will come in handy. Lucky's always getting pinned under cars.
Ah, there she is, my substation. God, I love saying my substation.
That thing is a goddang eyesore. I mean, I don't want Ted's monstrosity back, but this is a residential neighborhood after all.
Well, I do know of a legal precedent involving a public utility and a dairy farm. I'll tell you on one condition. Nobody messes with my plaque.
I'd swear, if it wasn't for the possibility of being electrocuted, I'd buy this house.
Well, I'll take a fake house over a big, ugly one any day.
So you really only get electrocuted if you're in the house, the idea is that it's not dangerous if you're outside the house. So this is the kind of substation the guys in King of the Hill were confronted with, electrical equipment naked to the elements and to the eye. It's actually one parcel of several in the northern Manhattan neighborhood of Sherman Creek, which I'll speak about more through this presentation. or you might be confronted with this type of substation. This is more enclosed. You can still see some stuff peeking out the top there. But this is in such a hot neighborhood of Manhattan, but further south, that it doesn't matter. You can see the new condos right across the street, and there's actually one over here and one over there as well. So in a substation, I'm just going to briefly mention what's in there, because Ron's going to give you all the technical details of what they are and what they do and why we really need them everywhere. But basically, there are two major types of equipment in a substation. There's transformers, like this one, which is in Anaheim's Park substation. There's a bunch of sophisticated switches and circuit breakers, like these under London's Leicester Square. And then there's some other stuff. There's always a lot of cooling equipment, like you see on the upper left, also Leicester Square. There's tons of cabling between the equipment and then out from the substation to the larger neighborhood, and there's relays, there's control equipment, so you've got a little sample. I just wanted you to get a sense of what you don't see in a substation, what you don't need to see, because it's, you know, not that attractive. So this is Edinburgh. This unenclosed substation in Edinburgh has been there quite a while. When it was first built, there wasn't much else there, and then this important major new financial district has sprouted up all around it. This is a Dewar Place in Edinburgh. On the right, this is the new Caledonian Exchange. On the left, which is just across the street from the substation, that's the Exchange Place development at Dewar Place, and it includes a major Sheraton, an international conference center, and lots of commercial and retail. So you can imagine that as this stuff sprouted around the substation, it became more of an issue than it had been when it was kind of a rundown neighborhood. About 10 years ago, the substation got some notice when Scottish Power hired a lighting designer to illuminate it with various colored lights at night, making it into a piece of public art. By the time I went there this summer, they still was some illumination, nothing I could get a good pick of. They had actually dismantled some of it because this substation is being upgraded and replaced. Here's the other end of the block. The substation you just saw is essentially behind the far scaffolding there. This part of the block, this 1898 building, was a generating station. It is a landmark in Edinburgh, and in fact, all of Edinburgh is on the world. All of central Edinburgh is a World Historic World Heritage Site. So when Scottish Power needed to build a substation, they had tons of layers of regulation they had to deal with. And I should also mention that a space constraint because of active rail, pretty much shallowly underneath. All of this together, they decided what they would do with the new business district and so forth sprouting around it was to build the replacement substation behind this wall, hide it behind the landmark, and in order to do that, they are using gas-insulated transformers. This is a technology popular in Japan, but it is the first use in Europe of GIT. We don't have it in the U.S., and that equipment is more expensive generally than what we use, but also more compact. There are some environmental concerns about it as well, but that is what's making this possible. So hiding substations behind a more attractive facade is a way to go. Con Ed has been doing it on and off for years and is doing it, I think, as a policy matter pretty consistently now. This is the prefab townhouse facade of Con Ed's new complex in Mott Haven, of which they are justly proud. The Mott Haven complex
includes both a transmission-level substation and an area-level substation, and Ron will explain more about what that means. And this is a rendering of a facade intended for Con Ed's new substation currently under construction in Sherman Creek, Academy Substation. You will remember Sherman Creek from the first slide. This site is a few blocks south of that particular site. Sherman Creek is a peninsula. This is the southern tip of the peninsula, and Con Ed actually owns a great deal of land throughout the southern third of the peninsula. The water actually, there's water on this site as well. So this is a nice landscaping and a nautical kind of theme for the waterfront site, which will be visible from the marinas to the south. But here's what it looks like overall. This is not even all of the Con Ed holdings at Sherman Creek. The site that I just showed you that's under construction for Academy Substation is actually off to your left. But this is a good, kind of a good sense of it as seen from across the Harlem River in the Bronx. And what you see here is what the New York City zoning resolution encourages. Substations may be built without any special approval, what's known as of right, on industrially zoned land in New York, M zoning, as it's known in the zoning code. And if they are built anywhere else, unless they are very small, if they're very small, less than 10,000 square feet, they can be built in certain commercial districts. But other than that, they do need to go through a special permitting process to be built, which takes time and money and is risky. Sometimes you can go through the process and end up not with the permit. So Con Ed looks for M land to buy, which may actually not be the most optimal from their engineering point of view, but if it's good enough and they don't have to go through the process, that's kind of what they go for. And then they hold on to it because it's just too difficult and expensive and risky to go through that permitting process. And the situation, obviously, it wastes land. So this is what they've been doing in London for a long time. This is Kingsway Substation in the West End of London. It dates back to 1967, in fact. And the substation is in the base of this round building. There's actually also a distribution room in the base of the office building next door, and there's actually yet another distribution room next to Peabody Terrace, a residential development that's just across a street that's about as narrow as this street here over here. The green banner is actually for an adult education facility. And this is the Finsbury Market substation in London near Liverpool Station. Here's another chance for you to see his transformer. Those are transformers there. This is a very old substation dating back to the 40s. You can see all the modern commercial stuff that has sprouted around this as well. And EDF Energy, the utility in London, actually has already sold off a piece of this property for private development. And it anticipates that it will soon be selling off the rest. This substation needs to, like the Edinburgh one, is the equipment is obsolete and needs to be replaced with new equipment. So the idea will be when they need to build the new substation anyway, they would build it underground with an office development above. And here's new construction, also in London. This is in the burgeoning South Bank area of London. There's actually a new substation built into this parking garage. It's just a few years old. I think it's 2002. And the yellow building is actually the back of the Hilton Tower Bridge Hotel. Or Tokyo, where they really stack stuff underground. This is actually a building that belongs to the Tokyo utility, TEPCO. A transmission-level substation is under this building on several levels to accommodate all the equipment. Just off to the right is a public plaza that's used for concerts, and there's room under that. They've built out the shell for an area-level substation there. This is also Tokyo. This is near the Ginza. Yet another substation is in the base of this building on the right. And then we have Nagoya, the fourth largest city in Japan. where Chubu Electric, the utility there, knew it needed to buy, needed to build a new substation, understood that the city planned to redevelop the parking lot that served the city's major landmark. The beautiful building at the top is Meijo, the castle of Nagoya, dating back to the early 17th century. So as in Edinburgh, the people in Nagoya had quite a set of regulations and challenges to deal with in a park setting with a major, unique, historical, cultural landmark to be respectful of. And they designed it to do that. This low-slung building here is actually the ventilation building for the substation. There's a waterfall on the side that faces the castle, and there's actually even a moat around it. The taller building accommodates the elevator access into the substation. There is actually an elevator in this low-slung building. It actually serves also as the entrance to a public parking garage below. Here's how they did it. You can see it all stacked beneath the surface in Nagoya. You see the transformer rooms at the bottom, about 100 feet underground. And then a layer of cable, a level of a cable room, a layer of the switchgear room, and then the public parking lot, which is accessible through the ventilation building. You can see on the left what you also saw in this picture on the left. That's a no theater that was built by the city as part of that redevelopment. Similarly, in London, where you see me having just emerged from the substation underneath Leicester Square, the utility in London, which was at the time London Electricity, arranged with the city of Westminster, which was about to undertake a park renovation to build a needed substation in the heart of the of London's theater district. And in fact, the controls to access this facility are built into the TKTS booth. Yes, that's the TKTS booth to get your discount theater tickets in for London's West End. And here's the square a few days later as they were decking it out to look like a Greek village for the premiere of Mamma Mia. So you see there thousands of movie fans standing on top of a substation without any idea. Here in New York, we have one glorious example of stacked uses. This is Seven World Trade. I'm only going to show one pic because when Jano Liberal arrives, he'll be showing many. But this is our one case of, so far, of having a substation with a maximum efficiency of land underneath some other facility and absolutely attractive to the neighborhood. Nobody knows it's there unless they've read some press account of it. We can do this too. The first step is to change the use group assignment, sorry to get zoningly technical, of four substations in our zoning code to allow them to be built as of right in commercial and residential zones as well as manufacturing zones. And we can talk more about that in Q&A. Believe me, lots of details are in the neighborly substation report, which is in your folder. Thank you.
Our first speaker was going to be Jano Lieber. He's going to arrive shortly, but I'm going to introduce all of them, including him. He'll just have to accept my mistakes or otherwise. This is exactly the right panel to discuss these issues. It's a sequence of property developers, Con Ed, and the people who actually do the electricity and the environmental interests. They bring to this room today a very broad range of experience in federal, state, municipal government, the private sector, and the nonprofit sector, and the volunteer world. Very briefly, and once again, the bios are in your package. Shall we do Jano first, even though he's not here? Jano Lieber is president of the World Trade Center Properties. He manages all aspects of the Silverstein Organization's efforts to rebuild the World Trade Center. He had a distinguished career before that in the private sector. He practiced law, and he worked in the mayor's office for a stretch. Ron Bosgo has been in the utility industry for 35 years. He's presently vice president of engineering and design at Con Ed. And he, before that, he worked at American Electric Power, one of the biggest electricity companies with myriad interests. Jim Gallagher is a senior vice president of energy policy at the New York City Economic Development Corporation. It's an office that advises the mayor on these issues. He serves as the chairman of the city's energy policy task force. He was with the PSC. He previously was with Northeast Utilities, TVA. These are the people, you know these names. I mean, these people power the nation, right? And then we have Ashok Gupta, who's the Air and Energy Program Director and Senior Energy Economist at NRDC. Ashok is, as far as I can tell, on just about every key board that has anything to do with energy and the environment. And it's been, I must say, a tremendous pleasure and honor to get to know him. 30 years ago, I couldn't find anything right about it at the NRDC, and I'm just delighted at how much one of us has matured since then. okay, who do we? I guess we're going to start. We'll start with Ron.
Okay, great. Good morning, and I'd like to thank Peter for his comments and welcoming me, and I'd like to thank the Manhattan Institute for providing a forum where we can discuss this important topic. This is a topic that is near and dear to Con Edison and to me personally. I'm going to start. My presentation is really going to be focused on why we need substations and how we try and integrate them into the community. And first, a little bit about Con Edison. We're a multi-commodity utility. We have electric. We serve electric in all five boroughs in Westchester. We also have a steam company. Steam is provided in Manhattan, southern part of Manhattan, south of 96th Street. And gas, we're also a large gas company. We provide gas to North Queens and upward into Westchester. We have a lot of cables above ground, underground. It's something like 130,000 miles of cable. You can wrap the earth five times with it. You'll see about 70% of that cable is underground, which gives us another challenge that I'll talk to a little bit later on in my presentation. And the topic of the day is substations, and we have 60 area substations as well as 38 transmission substations. And I'll explain the difference between the two as I get into my presentation. This is a chart that shows the load growth in New York City, right? And it goes back to the 1950s. And you see a fairly sustained growth in electric demand by our customers that go through that whole period. That dip there that you see is around the mid-70s when the city and the nation was going through some difficult times with the Arab oil embargo, as well as the city's own financial problem and you know, jobs leaving the city. But you see, as once you get past that 3 to 4 year period, you go back to a sustained growth period. I went back and looked at the, you know, where we are today, right? No one really knows what's going to happen to, given this economic climate, what growth would be like in the immediate future, right? So curiously, I went back and looked at the 30s, right, to see how the what happened to electric load growth in New York City. And it was a very similar type of, you know, situation developed. We see that peak there, right? That drop-off was a little steeper in the Depression in about 1931, 32. It was a shorter period in where we had this reduction in low growth, and then it resumed back to growth that you see typically shown here. This is an overview of the electric supply system, right? And this is typical pretty much of all utilities, right? If you look at the left side of that chart there, you'll see the generating stations as well as the transmission systems that interconnect to what we call our transmission substations, which are the orange boxes on that slide there. And what the transmission substations do, they basically channel this power that we import over to different areas in the city. And that power is received by what we call area substations because they are in the particular neighborhoods where the power gets distributed. And we have what we have in our Con Ed system is we have a variety of networks. and I'll go into that in the next slide. But this sort of schematically shows that each of those area networks, area substations, feeds a particular neighborhood. The one, when you design these systems, right, what you try and do is you want the load-serving entity to be as close to the load as possible. And the reason for that is that you want to minimize your line losses. So one way of doing that is to keep the voltage of the transport system, what is shown here is the 345 kV and 138 kV systems, the high-voltage systems. You want to keep that voltage as high as possible because as you double the voltage, you quadruple the power delivery capability. So you need less of a corridor to transmit power into the city the higher voltage you keep. And by keeping that voltage high, you also, the benefit of that is that you keep your line losses down, which provides for a very cost-efficient delivery system, as well as there's an environmental benefit to that, too. You don't need to burn more fuel to make up for those losses that you would have in a lower voltage system. What this is how we look at New York City. You'll see there are 69 networks that are shown here. Each of those little boxes is a network. Our planning and forecasting people look at each of those 69 networks. They try and forecast what customer demands would be, customer behavior, what load growth would be, and what facilities we need to accommodate that. Do we need to add more area substations? Do we need to get more generation? Do we need more transmission facilities? All of that comes in our reviews and load forecast, which is typically a 10-year and sometimes further time horizon. Here's an example of Manhattan, just taking those 69 networks.